to everything. There's a season and a time to everything under heaven. And it is time once again for Countryside Links to launch itself upon the world. The day after, actually, Lincoln City have just confirmed promotion to Division 1. So good news for the Imps fans from that point of view. Currently, Ben Lewis and myself are on location at the Lincolnshire Showground for, I think, your first ever Countryside Links, Ben.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. My first ever.
Well, it's a nice early start to a Sunday morning here. We're going to be, I wouldn't say pouncing, but we'll be having a few words with some of our fine contributors here. Some of the early exhibitors have been setting up in the main area. It's a little bit blustery today, but the sun is shining, and I'm sure there'll be lots of activities going on for people to really find out about the whole range of Countryside connections that are there. And, of course, Countryside Links 2019. What are your thoughts so far, Ben?
Yeah, it's an interesting setup. It's very familiar, obviously, with the Lincolnshire Show and what other various events they do have here. But no, it's my first time, so looking forward to seeing what's in store.
I know your BFF, Neil Curtis, is already setting up there. He's around from that point of view. I know you'd be very keen to have a word with him. We'll see if we can fit him in, because it is a fairly tight schedule today. And who knows whether you have a chance to actually sort of say, Neil, my man, how's it hanging?
Yes, quite.
The first exhibitor we managed to sort of cajole into actually working through this is the awesome Jane Haig. Jane, good to see you.
Hi, good morning.
Is this a first time for yourself at Countryside Links?
Yes, it is, yeah.
That's okay. I was beginning to think, I'm sure we must have encountered you as a good self before. But we've got some wonderful images here of countryside issues and so on. What brought you here to the Lincolnshire Showground today?
Well, my art is country themed, mostly with Lincolnshire animals as well. So I just thought it was a really good fit. And quite childish as well, some of them.
Well, exactly. It's very much an educational side of things here. Ben, any particular preference in terms of what we're looking at here for the pet portraits that are actually here?
Well, they're all magnificent. I mean, I'm a dog fan myself, but I think all of them are just really, really fascinating. Just for the benefit of the listeners, it's mainly sort of action shots, if you call them that. But they are brilliant. So many good expressions on them as well.
What inspires you, Jane?
My surroundings. I live in the countryside. I love painting hares and Lincoln red cattle, Lincoln long wools. Some of them are quite funky.
I was going to say that, I mean, the Lincoln long wool, who I already define very much as a kind of Rastafarian sheep, yeah, in a kind of Bob Marley-esque way, looks as though he's definitely tripping this particular character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just make it fun.
And in terms of the kinetic energy, I mean, the fox is really good. The hare is excellent from that point of view. Are there any animals that are particularly tricky, which you just think, oh, I don't know, I mean, if somebody actually asks you to do, I don't know, a particular sort of breed of bird or whatever?
No, I find horses, there's nowhere to hide with the fur with horses, because they're so smooth and shiny and gorgeous. There's one over there I've done, so I'm getting to grips with horses, but with a dog, you know, you've got more hair to sort of...
Yeah, exactly. Jane, have you been present at the Countryside event in the summer, of course, the Country Show?
Yeah, the County Show, yes. I'm actually exhibiting there for the first time this year as well, in the local marquee.
We shall certainly actually look forward to connecting with you there. Is there a website as well that you'd like to promote that people who can't get to Countryside Links today might contact with you?
Thank you. It's www.janehaig.uk.
Well, with the strapline, increasing awareness of reg tractor pork and bacon through education and promotion, it can only be the awesome ladies and pigs and the awesome...
Lizzie Hours, and also my lovely friend Natalie Kirkham.
Lizzie and Natalie, now that's the dream team, surely.
It is, absolutely, yes.
Ben Lewis is here for his first ever Countryside Links. He's had a couple of Countryside Line productions before. And, of course, the joys of the summer show. Ben, your thoughts and questions?
Yeah, it's a very interesting setup. Just talk us through what people can expect here today.
Right. We're having groups of 20 children at a time, but they've got to come and book, so it depends how many we get. So we might have to turn one or two away, but come back later on. We're making sausage rolls, so we're getting the ready-made pastry and then the sausage meat. So they make their own individual rolls, and they actually get their own ones back again, so that's a good thing. We cook them on site and get them to come back later. So
I know last year I think it was Bridget Royce who sort of availed herself of the wonderful challenge here, and it's really great that you've got this opportunity to, I suppose, more than the country show in June, actually give people a real chance to get some hands-on and give children a chance to actually find out how these things are made.
Yes, definitely. It all starts with the children. It's like with the farming side of things. You know, you've got to, going through the, when people retire, are there anybody, you know, are there any little ones there or coming along afterwards? And so you've got to nurture them at this stage get them interested in cooking and to know the high welfare product that we provide for them. And
I'm particularly interested, actually, to see that not only have you obviously got Facebook and Twitter accounts, but you've also on Instagram and Pinterest, really. So, I mean, Ladies in Pigs is clearly just becoming socially, totally all over.
We are. We're all over the place. This year is, you know, taking off. We're getting to more in schools, a little bit more in schools. We're not leaving the shows completely. We're going to events, music events and things like that. So we're branching out. And we can do with all these lovely things that we can do. So
it's awesome. Ben, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a very good educational setup, and I think it's nice to get children to realise it's more than, you know, sausage roll just comes from more than just a packet. You know, it's
getting a supermarket.
Them involved. Well, it gets them involved, doesn't it? And it gets them sort of active, and it's nice to interact with them, I guess. And
oh, it is, absolutely, and they all love it, and getting their hands all messy and everything. Some go, ooh, and don't want to go any further, but mostly they're
probably the vegans.
Hands-on, yes. That's
sorry, only kidding.
No, I applaud that one, so.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Take the William Sitwell approach. Moving on, in terms of Ladies and Pigs, of course, the red tractor sign, which many people might still, amazingly, not understand the significance of the red tractor. So go on, would you like to just please explain why the red tractor is so important?
The red tractor, right, but there are some people out there that have probably not even seen one.
Just Ben, have you seen the red tractor?
Yes, I have indeed.
Well, it's all over the supermarkets, hopefully, especially in these places like Lidl and Aldi. I know we probably shouldn't be speaking of...
Well, it's quite all right. Other supermarkets are available, what the heck?
Yeah, there are other ones there, so... Anyway, yes, we have rigorous checks... 4 times a year by our vet, and the red tractor come once a year and spend a whole day on farm going through everything, make sure everything's right for the animals and that they're reared in a high welfare standard, which is really good. So you can go to your supermarket or wherever you go and you know you're getting a good standard of product and the animals have been looked after so well. And so that's, we pass that on to the public when we're working there, and you know, things are looking good for us at the moment.
Of course they are, because you're in charge, Nancy. That's the important thing. You're coordinating it like an expert.
Oh, thank you very much for that.
And in terms of looking at the ways in which this event is doing, I think this is the 6th Countryside Links. It just seems to get bigger and bigger each year. I mean, if it carries on at this rate, I would have thought by the time we get to 2025, it'll almost be as big as the country show itself.
That's true. I came to the first one, and we were outside just cooking sausages and handing out tasters.
I remember it well.
So yes, I'm sure you came along and took part in some of the tasters. But yes, this is a better way because it's educating the children. So yes, it's got bigger and better every year. You learn by some of the mistakes and you learn by the good things. So
precisely. And looking ahead, obviously, to the summer, you mentioned a few sort of locations. Obviously, the Lincolnshire Show in June as ever, presumably. Well, it wouldn't be the Lincolnshire Show without Ladies and Pigs, let's face it.
Oh, I'm going to let you down here. We're not coming to this
no!
one. Crazy, isn't it? No, we've got other shows that we like to swap around a little bit, but we are at the Nottinghamshire Show. So
it's May time, of course.
I'm looking forward, yes. I think it's the 12th and 13th. So somewhere around there, so don't quote me on that one, but it's...
I think you're right. I must admit, I've been very guilty that since it changed its name and stopped being the Newark and Notts Show and became the Nottinghamshire County Show, as I often said to Adrian Johnson, we've been most remiss. We haven't covered it for quite some time. So maybe you've actually just given us the incentive to actually get our own the way there.
Yes, that would be good to see you there. Yes, absolutely. So, yes, I always refer to it as the Newark Show, so it's always been that to me. And I'm judging at the Robin Hood competition, so get some good entrance there and, yeah, be great.
As ever, a genuine pleasure and delight. I know it's going to be an awesome day. Great Yorkshire Show, that's another Ladies and Pigs territory, isn't it?
Yes, and that's another one that has been, but we've stepped back a little bit.
Wow.
We're going in different directions, so we've funded that our expenses are paid for, so we've only got a pot through the year, so we've got to jiggle it around a little bit. So,
well, if there's a financial angel listening to this who fancies actually investing in Ladies and Pigs, I'm sure that you greet them, not necessarily with open arms, but you'd be quite happy if somebody says, yes, we need the Ladies and Pigs at all our shows.
Yes, absolutely. If anybody wants to come and sponsor us, yes, we'll welcome them with open arms, and we'll, you know, all the sponsors are put up there in lights to a certain extent. So, yes, come along, sponsor Ladies in Pigs.
Redhill Farm free-range pork. Actually, the perfect interviewee to feature after we've covered ladies and pigs. In fact, diagonally opposite to ladies and pigs. And the delights of, I suppose, in many ways, a carnivore's paradise. So we're about to speak to the fabulous
Terry Tomlinson from Redhill Farm.
Terry, in terms of this whole sort of sequence here, as I said, it's a carnivore's paradise. And also the quality of the cuts just seems to be quite outrageously wonderful.
Yes, it's all the pork is produced at Redhill Farm by myself and Jane, my wife, and it's all free range, and it's everything you see here today has all been specially made for this event this morning.
And as we have commented on, I think in terms of numbers and size, etc., obviously we're expecting a large turnout, and quite rightly so.
Absolutely, it's grown in strength from year after year. It really does attract the families which we're aiming for. To try and reconnect everybody back to farming and educate the children to know where all these fantastic produces come from in Lincolnshire.
And I say particularly good that Lincoln have celebrated promotion as well. So, I mean, Lincoln City move up and indoors Redhill Farm continues its premiership abilities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic for Lincoln. It's amazing how they've transformed. Them two guys, the manager, has transformed that club. It's fantastic for the county, really is.
A Cowley Brothers fan, clearly. Ben, over to you.
Yeah, well, obviously you're a household name in Lincoln. And, you know, for an event like this, what do you find sells best? What kind of your key sellers in an event like this?
Well, we're cooking outside, so that all the hot food, especially today as it's cold, all the hot food, sausage rolls and pork rolls sell really well. But we're doing just a pork pie demonstration where the children can get involved. So obviously then after that, the pork pies go really well.
I mean, I can see the strategy is at work here, Terry. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And obviously, there's some interesting different cuts here, and obviously, Chinese tenderloin pork. Do you find there's an interesting range? People are starting to buy more interesting products?
Yeah. Everybody's traveling the world now at a drop of a hat, and they're all enjoying different cuisines from around the world. And so you just have to make things more interesting. Not everybody wants just the standard cut, but you just make things a little bit more interesting. But they're still the favourite is that, you know, the Sunday pork roast with a crackling. It takes some beating.
You see, you're making our mouths water now. I mean, this is unfair. This is cruel, Terry. Cruelty to programme presenters. Outrageous. Redhillfarm.com, of course, is the go-to address in terms of the website. I feel as though, Terry, I mean, we spoke about this last year. We really should do a location report with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. Have a word with my wife, Jane. She'll sort that side of it out.
Splendid. Wow, what can I say? Wild mushroom and garden vegetable pie, chicken pie with chestnuts, gaming red pie. The lights have come on. It's like illuminated in all sorts of ways. And from Lime Tree Pantry Foods now, the tremendous...
So, who is?
Eric Jackson.
Eric. I like the way you gave a pause there, Eric, just before Jackson. Just for dramatic effect, which is wonderful. I mean, I'm just blown away by the range that we've actually got here. But, Ben, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's some very interesting flavours and combinations here, which I've no doubt taste lovely.
They do. I mean, proper short-crust pastry, non-hydrogenated fats. They're just wonderful.
It may be too early to actually sort of say, have you got any tastes for Ben to actually participate in from that point of view? But what's the official line now?
Well, we normally do tasting, but I'm going to try it today, see if we can do.
Okay, we'll work through that. Now, roughly how long does it take to put together this whole package together? Roughly, are we looking at sort of, well, years, obviously. Is it a few hours? How long did it take you to set up today?
It doesn't really take us that long to set up, to be honest, because we're fairly well organised. We know we've been doing this job for years. It's quite easy to do. Less than an hour, I would have thought, really. Well, there's two of us, right?
And have you been a regular at Countryside Links? Obviously, we spoke, I think, last year, in terms of the actual overall sort of package, etc. Have you noticed the way in which, now in its sixth year, I believe, it's just been getting bigger and bigger?
I believe it is getting bigger and bigger, yes. It's getting more and more popular, lots more people. We love it. We love coming here. We're normally in the other building, but we normally come here. It's great.
I thought it was a way forward from that point of view. Anyway, Ben.
Yeah, and what would be your most popular flavour? What would be the most interesting pie? And what would you have it with? Mash, chips, anything in particular?
It varies. Everyone's different. Personally, I would have it with, in a meal, potatoes, veg, gravy as well. Just depends on, really. Most popular ones are probably the... beef and ale and lamb and mint gravy. Lamb and mint gravy is fabulous.
Yes, I'm looking at the lamb and mint gravy from the view onwards. Yes, clearly, I won't go into the who ate all the pies, who ate all the pies. You know, we won't go in that sort of line. It's not good. But in terms of a website, where's the best place for people to go if they can't get to Countryside Links to find out more about Perfect Pastry, Perfect Pies?
Yeah, it's quite simple. LimeTreePantryFoods.com. We do home delivery. They'll arrive frozen to your door as well. You can order online. Or you can order over the phone and we'll bring them to a show if you're coming to a show.
It's just no ends to customer service, really. Absolutely fantastic. Eric, it's been great speaking with you, good self. Catch you again, presumably, at the Countryside Show in June.
Thank you very much. You probably will do.
Ah, the sheer joy of Mr. Hooda and MrHoodas.co.uk. And I believe we're actually speaking to Mr. Hooda himself.
Yes. Hi, how are you doing? Are you all right?
Very good indeed. Now, fresh herbs, spice mixes, etc. You're setting up, obviously, for Countryside Links. I mean, I'm just blown away by this. Ben, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Talk us through what you've got, the products and the produce here.
I mean, these are ready blended curry paste. They're all naturally preserved in a bit of rapeseed oil. We've done all the hard work, so you don't have to go and mess about trying to buy 25 different spices yourself.
That sounds like a one-stop shop for me. Yeah. Have you been at the Countryside Links event before?
This is the first time I'm exhibiting for the Countryside Links show. But I'm looking forward to a good day.
I just sense you're going to have one, Mr. Hooda. I really do sense you're going to have one. I love the Taj Mahal upon the person, the logo there. It's very good.
It's a floating one on the river.
Set for global warming as well. Fantastic.
Of course. Everything, anything to...
Yep, so talk us through how you'd use the curry paste. Would it be in curry mix itself, or do you have it as a separate condiment?
I mean, basically, it comes with the recipe, so it tells you get your onion, your tomato and everything, then you just add the required amount of paste from the jar. So, for example, a typical single person will probably use a couple of teaspoons at a time, and then that will save you buying and grinding about 15 other different ingredients.
Oh, okay, brilliant. And talk us through the range. What kind of curry paste have you got?
I mean, we have got 8 products in our range, ranging from a raita paste to making tandoori to tikka to making a curry. So we have a universal curry paste where it's a versatile paste where you could create your own curry from a korma to vindaloo to madras by adding different things. We give you the recipe ideas. We have an instant rub where you could rub it into your lamb chicken, use it on the barbecue like summertime's coming now. Or we have paste for making onion bhajis and pakoras. So basically, if you go to a typical Indian restaurant and you look at a menu, you want to make some of that dishes that you see on the menu, you can make it with our paste. That's the whole idea of our product.
Excellent. And where can people buy these sort of products? Are they in mainstream shops, or is it on your website, or any particular products in store?
Our products are available through the Lincolnshire Cooperative in Lincolnshire and through good quality farm shops and delis. You can't buy it through our own online shop at the moment. It is being built. It should be ready within another 5-6 weeks' time, so you'll be able to buy it through us directly.
I'm very tempted to break into a chorus of Vindaloo, Vindaloo. Oh, we all love Mr. Hooda. But I'm sorry, it's a way forward.
I mean, people always love a hot curry, so why not? You know what I mean? So, cackle.
Now, one of our regular midweek drivettes, Rupert Baker, he's an actor who's in the series London's Burning back in the day, always said we really should do a location report with Heckington Windmill, set in the heart of rural Lincolnshire. Who should we actually find at Countryside Links today, but from Heckington Windmill, the awesome
Charles Pinchbeck.
Charles, good to connect with you, good self. Now, you can discover middling, you can explore history, you can love baking, you can enjoy food. I noticed your colleague is currently busily sorting out, strapping down the gazebo, which is all great stuff.
It's all to do with the wind, and we enjoy it when it makes the mill turn, and we also have to deal with it when we're trying to put our gazebos up.
What is special about Heckington Windmill? Because I know I've heard a great deal about this. What makes it particularly unique and just a magical place to go?
The uniqueness, it's the only working 8-sail windmill in the whole world. I mean, traditionally mills have four sails, but in Lincolnshire we have 5-6. And at Heckington we have the world's only 8-sail working mill.
That's a very interesting fact. I didn't know that, actually. But and what does having 8 sails make a difference to? Is it just a visual thing, or is it inside as well? Does it change the products?
Is it greater power? I mean, is that... You've got 8, it's more powerful than 4.
It is more powerful, but actually the real difference it makes is its reliability and wind performance, because you need a fairly strong wind to get a mill to turn. And with 4 sails, it will stall in perhaps a 12 or 15 mile an hour wind. Heckington Mill will work in the lightest of winds, so it actually means that you can grind more days and give a more secure flour supply. In 1799, there was a famine in Lincoln, because although there were 13 windmills, there was no wind for months, and there was nothing to grind the grain into flour. So having 8 sails and being able to grind more days was a real advantage.
I wasn't going to mention the B word, but I suppose this is one way in which you can actually sort of enhance the way in which product is produced, really.
Yes.
Internally.
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah.
Not that I'm suggesting that obviously post Brexit or whenever it actually does take place, we'll be having a famine, but it has been promoted. Ben.
Yeah, what kind of products do you produce then? Obviously, I've seen flour, but is there anything else in particular that you produce alongside this?
Yes, one thing which we're actually also unique for, we are the only windmill grinding malt. We actually have an on-site microbrewery, and we grind some of their malt with our stones. We're the only mill grinding malt. They're the only brewery using stone ground malt. Their rolling stone bitter is really something quite special.
I think that was one of the reasons Rupert was keen to do a location report with you, so I think we're going to have to get that sorted through.
Yeah, and I think I'd join him on that one. But
We have a tap room night on a Friday evening. It's a wonderfully chilled place to be.
I can say I'll be the designated driver on this, but that's okay. That's fine. The web address, of course, is heckingtonwindmill.org.uk. Is this your first Countryside Links?
It is, yes. No, we're really looking forward to it. We're very proud of what we've done at Heckington, and we want to tell people about it and get them to come down and enjoy all that we have to offer.
Well, let's also give a name check for the young lady who's been busily actually sorting things through, saying, I don't know, all these people who do media productions, etc. I've had to hold various other pieces that we have here.
Yes, Anne Strong, who's our membership secretary, an absolute tower of strength.
Hello, Anne Strong, a strong tower of strength.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Excellent, likewise. I've got to mention the Queen's Award for volunteering that I see there. The MB, talk us through that, please.
Yeah, we were very proud to be awarded that in the Queen's Birthday Honours last year. I think we're one of only two mills in the country to have received it, and it's a recognition of the enormous amount of effort and energy that the volunteers put into it. We are an entirely voluntary run organisation, and not only do we open and run the mill 200 days a year, we've also just delivered a £1.75 million regeneration project, which has created the fantastic site that we have today, all by volunteers.
I think congratulations very much in order for that. We look forward to hopefully visiting you as well. Who knows, let's do it this summer. What do you think, Ben?
I think that's a really good idea.
We're just getting into the tasting scenario here, and Anne has actually just proven to be a sterling wonder, because Anne, you've actually brought us some plum bread to taste.
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Which has been
We made it in the bakehouse, so we collected the items and made it in the bakehouse, and then we sell it in the tea rooms.
Which is fantastic. And Charles, you were just explaining how that's put together.
Yes, it's flour from the windmill, and then the fruit is soaked overnight in damson porter from our own microbrewery. Some of the damsons actually come off the trees in my garden, so it's incredibly low food miles and high quality provenance. And then we have an on-site baking team, and they produce this amazing plum bread with the damson porter fruit.
Well, let's do that full sort of taste test, Ben. I know you could be a major food critic here. What have you made of the plum pudding?
It's absolutely delicious. It was really nice. And it's nice to hear that, obviously, everything's done locally. Everything's done, with very good produce and the very best produce. We actively encourage anyone who's visiting to go in and experience it. It's wonderful.
Charles and many thanks indeed. Pleasure meeting you.
Lovely to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, as we said, a nice fresh breeze as we pass on from windmills to Heritage Lincolnshire, the county's largest heritage charity and the Lincolnshire World's Walking Festival. And we're about to speak to
Alex Rowbottom, community archaeologist.
Alex Rowbottom, community archaeologist. What does a community archaeologist actually do?
Well, lots and lots of things. But mainly we are just trying to get communities involved in archaeology and heritage in Lincolnshire as best we can.
And there's so much obviously around with respect to our Roman forebears and a whole variety of other bits and pieces within that. I noticed in keeping with the educational aspect, you've got lots of things for children to get involved with later on today.
Yes, or adults, whoever wants to have a go at badge making or colouring in, you're more than welcome to come and have a go.
Ben, do you fancy some mindfulness and colouring in, perhaps, to help with that final stage of the dissertation?
Maybe, maybe it'll get me through, we'll see.
Make sure you'll Yeah,
all sorts of shields there. And your colleague here who's busily actually sorting out the badge-making device as we speak?
Yep, there's lots of badges to make as well. And you can come and find out about all the projects we've got going on in Lincolnshire and how to get involved and sign up and come and do a variety of things.
Talk us through some of the key things there. In fact, we'll sort of just motor around from that point of view. In terms of the notion of exploring and debating that, we're having something held up in a way which is absolutely critical. So it's the Walking Festival. So what's this all about?
Oh, well, the Lincolnshire World's Walking Festival is coming up in May and June. And there's two large walking festivals that go on in Lincolnshire. There's the South Lincolnshire Walking Festival as well. And it's just a great a couple of weeks where anyone can come and get involved in a variety of walks throughout the Wolds.
Now, just to confirm, this isn't power walking. This isn't a case of where you have to make those strange buttock movements in the back by sort of wandering around at some strange pace. It's not an Olympic sport. It's a sort of general walk, yeah?
Yeah, well, there's a variety of different walks. There's tough walks. There's longer walks that go on for miles, so 6, 7, 8 miles. And then there's shorter walks where you can check out the local heritage. There's guided tours as well. Places where you can go to a restaurant or a pub as well. All different types, anything. There's things for everything on there with dogs and pets. You can take your walk.
And it's ecologically friendly as well, because you don't actually sort of clutter up the carbon scenario whilst you're walking too. Ben?
Yes, I think it's always a good activity as well to encourage people to, you know, get outside their home, kids to get off their devices, anything like that, and just experience the wildlife and the nature for the day, you know. And I think facilitating experience like that helps it go wonders, you know, it's just wonders.
And we almost introduced your colleague beforehand while she was waving various other bits and pieces. Would you like to give a full introduction to
Sarah? This is Sarah, one of our volunteers. She's going to be helping us today.
She's already holding up the stands, holding up the other bits and pieces. Sarah, you're doing extremely well. How did you get involved as a volunteer? Was it just something that you effectively said, yeah, I've always wanted to make badges, but preferably with heritage Lincolnshire?
I've been part of a volunteer team for many, many years. When I first came to Lincolnshire, I got involved with archaeology through archaeology, Boston Archaeology Group, and I'm passionate about archaeology and history.
So in many ways, you would be the Lara Croft to Alex's Indiana Jones, then, I presume?
Absolutely.
Dream team.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, come on down and have a go.
And one of the most wonderful things about, obviously, the Countryside Links thing is people actually get into cosplay. I mean, I know, Ben, last time you were seeing people dressed as all sorts of creative characters at the Sci-Fi Weekend. It's a different kind of cosplay. It's historic cosplay.
Yeah, it's a slight change from what we were used to, but it's fantastic. Fascinating what you're wearing. Just talk us through what kind of costume you've got on.
Okay, well, we're here as Viking leatherwork traders. So I've got quite the basics of a woman's outfit. So I've got a linen kirtle, and then I've got a wool over apron, and then I've got my nice wool cape, which I will need today because it's pretty chilly. and then, of course, around my waist, I've got everything I would need for the day. So I've got my pouch for my money. I got my pouch for anything else that I might want, and there's a tiny little eating knife there, so you're wearing everything you want.
Toolkit almost a very, very handy toolkit.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I haven't got my Viking handbag with me, so
everything that a Viking woman would actually need. And your name is?
My name's Jenny White, and we're here with Shed Time Leatherwork.
Excellent. And Jenny, you've actually had taken the chance to actually visit some of the other people. We're hopefully going to grab a few words in a few moments with the gentleman who's behind this little stand, which is Whisker Hills Pottery. What drew you to this stand, Jenny?
Oh, well, Sean and I actually know each other, so we just came for a bit of a catch-up because we've not seen each other for ages.
This is good. Okay, well, Jenny, we'll come and catch up with you later in your stand. Many thanks for that. Sean, if we can come over briefly to your good self, and we see octopuses, we see octopi in many ways. We see a whole range of open studio knot scenario and ceramics in full force.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Whisker Hills Pottery. I make pottery. It's based loosely on sort of medieval and Renaissance pottery, but it's influenced by Greek and Roman and everything in between, basically. I should be in a costume in a moment as well, so I dress as sort of like a Renaissance, like an Italian potter, basically.
Yeah, for a moment I thought you were actually channeling the inner Lincolnshire peasant look, but no, you've actually gone beyond that. You're going to be sort of, you're going to bring Europe into it as well.
Hopefully, yeah. Although I've got some seed bags on the floor to keep me warm here, some Lincolnshire bags and some Chinese ones as well, so there's a bit of everything in it. Yeah, it's sort of quite an eclectic sort of thing. I do a lot of work for museums and for Lincolnshire museums and Nottinghamshire museums as well. So it ties in with the historical elements. So there's bits of art and there's bits of heritage and history. And I say costume as well as all the pottery.
And music, I see. You're currently, you have upon your person.
Yeah, this is little mandor, which is like a little travelling mandolin for travelling musicians and artisans, which I like to sort of play. It's probably not in tune, so
I'm sure it'll be wonderful. Off we go.
does need a tube.
Do you know, I mean, Ben was hopping around in a circle, a circular moment, like a maypole dancer personified. It was wonderful.
Of course it was, yeah. No, it was brilliant. It was a very nice tune. May I ask, just very quickly, what got you into pottery? Was it something you've always done since you were young, or is it something sort of more recent as such?
I actually trained as an industrial mould maker in Stoke, as an industrial potter, in the early 90s, well, in 1990. And then
the potteries were fully the potteries.
When there was proper potteries there, yeah. And then I started doing studio ceramics, and I did a degree in studio ceramics in Cardiff. Set up a pottery, but to finance it, just started doing bits of teaching and started working in museums. And there was a point where, I can't remember when, at some point somebody said, why don't you put a costume on and teach us how to do that? And it all sort of merged together and melded together as a... It's like a sort of complete product in a way, like being a historical potter, but making the pots and selling pots and decorating them and everything.
And lots of notions. We mentioned octopuses. Of course, back in the day, presumably, they would have been perceived as sea monsters, really, not just sort of octopuses, etc., but scary sea monsters.
They were. If you want to know more about it, I do have an exhibition of all my work at Gainsborough Old Hall at the moment, which is full of pottery with all these animals on, and they all have stories, they all have folklore and allegory behind them. The octopi were, like I say, they were seen as sea monsters. They were also, in Shintoism, they were seen as, because they can regrow themselves, they were symbols of sort of good luck and they were symbols of prosperity. There was one of the octopus, what I do on the bowl, is called the Great Octopus of Prosperity, and it said if you touch him, you'll become rich.
Well, I think we need to test this out, Ben. clearly, yeah. Do you want to touch the octopus?
We can do. It's the big bowl here.
The big one, yeah.
There we go.
We've got a photograph to confirm that as well. I'll see the magic coming through there.
I'll buy my lottery ticket tonight.
If you touch him, you become rich, and if I sell him, I'll become even richer.
Awesome. I could always break into Ringo Starr's Octopus's Garden, but I won't ask you to go down that for the good line.
I could play along for you.
Shall we do it? Shall we do a little bar? Yeah, let's go with it. Yeah, go on. Do a whole thing. I'll see if I can remember a few of the opening lines. I think, I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden with you. Oh my God, da da da, in an octopus's garden in the shade. I think we need to work on it.
it's a no from me for now, but...
We are walking and talking while Sally proves that she is a multitasking person extraordinaire, because she's carrying not one, not three coffees, Sally.
I am. Three coffees. You have to keep everybody going. It's a little breezy up here this morning, Alex.
Well, the message we've been getting, certainly from the exhibitors that have been returning, apart from the newbies we've spoken to today, is this is getting bigger and bigger. And I think you're also going to have to multitask even more now as we get sort of control messages coming through.
Bear with me while I just turn my radio down.
It just keeps it live. That's the important thing. A reminder that you're listening to the Midweek Drive on location at Countryside Links this year. If you're listening to this on Siren Radio, it may well be that the actual event has passed, but for online listeners, it's just here. It's happening. It's a great event. Are we sorting ourselves?
I think so. I think I can talk now.
Right, Ben, would you like to take over the interviewing duties?
Definitely. So, Sally, obviously it's my first time here at Countryside Links. Is there anything particularly you think I should explore on my first day here?
Well, you definitely need to make your way into the farming zone and see all the various breeds of sheep and cattle that are up there. And then in the Epic Centre into the food zone, Ben. You go in there, you won't come out. You'll be in there all day.
Wonderful. Yeah, very true there indeed. And obviously this event has grown, it's getting bigger as the years go on. Do you see it ever stopping?
No, we're really proud of this event. It's a fantastic day out for all the family, educating everybody about food farming in the countryside, and we just see it going from strength to strength each year.
Brilliant, and obviously the weather's looking pretty good today. So you expect a big crowd coming?
Yeah, we are, hopefully. There are people queuing already, as you can see, as we approach the entrance gate. Let everybody come along. It really is a fantastic day out for all the family.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that, Sally. It was great to speak with you.
Moving on. Ben, earlier we had a shot of your good self with a slightly smaller tractor, and now we've got the serious beasties.
I know. It's almost like we're getting there. We're getting higher and higher. It's
higher and better and stronger and faster. And with Louth Tractors extraordinaire, the gentleman who's about to speak is...
John Smith.
John, The only thing I probably can say with certainty, as far as tracks are concerned, is that the red tend to be Massey Ferguson and green tend to be John Deere. Is that correct?
Oh, how wrong you are.
Oh, no.
How wrong you are. Massey Ferguson are gold and red and every colour under the sun. This red one's a Case. The dark red, the cherry red tractors, only colour you can get it in is red. I'll tell you wrong, special order, you can get it in black.
But of course,
like everybody else, you can have it wrapped to suit yourself. You can have it in gold or blue or silver or any colour. These tractors are wrapped.
Do more normally farmers actually, are they getting to the stage of almost pimping their tractor these days?
Very much so. Some farm businesses have corporate colours. So if their corporate colours are, say, blue and gold or blue and yellow, and they then buy red tractors for whatever, we deliver the tractors blue.
A year ago, Ben was working with Bentley Motors. Don't do tractors, as far as I know, but this is a whole new world, probably.
No, not yet, but I'm sure someone will come up with an idea soon to do that. But, yeah, it's a wonderful sort of site you've got here with different kinds of tractors. Do you find that some of them are more popular than others, or do you find a lot of people are now bringing up to sort of the more pimping, more tailored style tractors? Is that becoming more popular?
It is becoming more popular. The bread and butter still is straight down the middle, a bit like this one next to us, 165 horsepower. That's the sort of common workhorse on the farm. But of course, the range is from 50 horsepower for odd jobs and around the yard and that sort of thing, up to our biggest tractor, 600 horsepower. For the biggest arable operations in Lincolnshire.
Which obviously pays dividends when it comes to obviously food production and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Is a tractor for life, not just for Christmas? I mean, in terms of longevity, is it, or do you find that people actually come and say, oh, we've got to upgrade to the latest one every 2 or 3 years?
Everyone's different. Some people keep the tractors for at least 10 years, and then they have another life. They usually go for export or perhaps onto a stock farm where they'll... The life of a tractor, if it's looked after, is about 20 years. Some customers buy every year, some buy every 3, some buy every 5. Each one's different.
I seem to recall you being a regular at Countryside Links. I don't think we spoke last year, but we spoke the year before that. Is that right, or am I just hallucinating again?
No, you're right. I think we're the only tractor company that's been here every year since its inception.
6 years.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Lath Tractors, the place to go. Ben, anything else?
Yeah, just also... obviously, the event itself is growing, it's getting bigger year on year. Do you find yourself coming out more numbers, bigger, more tractors coming every single year with you?
Definitely. I think in year one, there were one or two. I may have over-egged it saying we're the only one here, but I think we were. But now, I don't know what there are, there's about a dozen here. The popularity has sort of bred popularity.
We'll give hats off to Rosie Crust, who's a baby this is in many ways. We saw her looking very flustered before, just as actually Sally was wandering around giving coffee to various other folks, which is great. But it's good to see that Lincolnshire Agricultural Society are well aware. I know when we first started, or when they first started with respect to Countryside Links, they really weren't sure whether it was going to work at all. But I think it's proven to be very much the start of the whole agricultural season.
Well, very much so. It's a huge success now. And I guess it's one of its original aims was to sort of introduce a younger age group, families, to the experience here at the showground. And hopefully the same people will come back to the Lincolnshire show. So I don't know what the attendance was last year. Was it 5,000?
It's about that, yeah.
Yeah, so. And the first year it was under 1,000. So it's a really good day out for the family.
And Lath Tractors, of course, clearly online presences, etc. Just type in Lath Tractors, you'll go there, presumably.
Yeah. We've got a brand new website.
Wow.
Needs a bit of fettling, as they say around here, but we've got a brand new website.
It's Ben from Brighton Fettling. It's probably a different line around that point of view.
Who knows?
It's an educational process, obviously.
I think fettling's a Lincolnshire word, but no doubt it's everywhere, but means something else altogether.
The Sheep Show. A year ago, when we spoke to this gentleman, Ben, and no, you weren't with us then, but we were talking about the way he actually dealt single-handedly with an escaped sheep in St Pancras. Was it St Pancras?
No, King's Cross.
I knew it was a station close by. Platform 9 3/4.
Yeah, I'm totally trying to forget that. Thanks for bringing that up.
It's still out there on YouTube, and it's probably one of the classic things, Ben, if you've got your mobile phone to hand, just watching this man rescue a sheep.
Well, yeah, you can see it.
And as you already said, it's nice to see that citizens in London, when they actually see a sheep go wild, they don't help at all. They just get their mobile phones.
That's city folk for you. Exactly. They're a breed of themselves, unfortunately.
You're from Norfolk, of course, originally. So as Ben was saying, is it going to be the New Zealand chap? No, it's going to be our very own Ginger from Norfolk.
Yeah, no, we do it better than the Kiwis. I'll put that out there.
Brilliant. That's wonderful. Talk us through some of the sheep we've got here today. Are there any particular characters that we want to know about?
Well, this year I've only got 50% dancing sheep. I've got two old boys in Sam and Dougal, Sam the Suffolk and Dougal the Scotch Blackface. But I do have two brand new boys on stage, Nobby the Norfolk Horn and Lenny the Lincoln Longwool. Neither are 1 year old yet, but I've just seen Nobby take a cheap shot at Sammy there. That's the Norfolk boy having a go at the Suffolk boy. There you go.
Any truth in the rumour that actually the two sheep who are no longer with the sheep show were actually signed by Paul Lambert for Ipswich Town?
I wouldn't even go that way.
I'm sure they look like that in their backline. Obviously, sadly, Ipswich Town will be playing Lincoln City next year in the first division of the Premier League because Ipswich had their relegation confirmed yesterday. Just as Lincoln City had their promotion confirmed yesterday.
Well, there you go. Well, there is a silver lining. I'm a Norfolk boy. What can I say? I'm a Norfolk boy that supports Tottenham, so that's a bit different. But there you go.
Well, let's not talk about European finals. But you did well against Huddersfield yesterday, 4-0.
Yeah, let's talk about sheep. Yes. Let's talk about sheep.
Ben.
Yes. Do you find kids are very interested in watching the sheep show? Do they find they've got an interest in sheep in general?
I mean, I'd like to think so. I get them sitting down there on the promise that they're going to dance. And then I've got half an hour to get as much information into them as possible. If you've not seen the show before, it is designed for adults and children. I mean, the adults had to pay to get in, so there'll be some jokes in there which might be a bit close to the bone, but the kids don't get it.
And the bikini line one, I think, is always an impressive one.
Yeah, bikini line and Bob Marley. But apart from that, I mean, my show's all about education. Once they've finished listening to my show, they'll know about sheep's eyesight, its smell, its sense of hearing, what we do with the wool. And everything I can get in half an hour, really.
Excellent, that's brilliant. And where else do you take the show after? Is there any sort of upcoming shows after this event?
I was supposed to be going down to King's Cross again.
Go!
Yeah, no, but they've cancelled,
thankfully. Oh.
Yeah, perhaps that's something that happened last year, I don't know. Perhaps Waitrose didn't want it. But I can't think of anything, any better advertising. Fresh as lamb that's walked in and out of Waitrose, that's for sure. But no, I've got a couple of weeks off, but then my next show is the South of England, down in Ardingly. But do come along and see your local boy, Lincoln Longwool.
We did actually see an artist earlier in the report that we're doing today, Ginger, who actually had produced a multicoloured rainbow version of Lincoln Longwool in portrait form. I was thinking about Lincoln Longwool. I think, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he wants a bit more colour in his life.
Well, he does, unfortunately. Lenny now is category 3. We made more money off of that creature than pretty much any other sheep in this country. Now we've got about just over 500 of them left. So come down and get to see them, get an appreciation for your local boys because they are great characters and they've got such a big history.
So sheepshow.co.uk. If memory serves, did you get to do the Lincolnshire Bigger Show last year?
No, I got a feeling that was the Mad Kiwi, Stuart.
Yeah,
Mad as a bucket full of frogs. He's back from his travels next week, so you'll see him around the country somewhere.
That and his dog and duck show. What's not to love?
Well, you get to know him, though. He's lovely. Yes, yes. You've just got to go 100 miles an hour with Stewie, or you're not going to keep up. Yeah. That's
just... Ginger, it's been awesome. As ever, thesheepshow.co.uk is obviously the go-to place. And yes, I'm going to set Ben the task of finding out the YouTube video now, because it is a classic.
It is, yeah. And if you're coming down today, show's 10:30, 12:00, 1:30, and the last show of the day will be 3:00. So get yourselves down here and meet Lenny and the boys.
Lovely. Look forward to that. He's not happy.
Well, when you've got a man with his seed drill, clearly you could only be at the Lincolnshire Wolds Countryside Service, maintaining traditional rural skills, balancing good agricultural methods with the natural landscape, and promoting sustainable farming systems with, of course, the fabulous David Rodger.
Good morning to you.
David, talk to us about what you brought along today, together with your seed drill.
Yes, thank you very much. I've got a seed drill and I've got a beam drill on the other side of the display as well. We've got a display of agricultural implements celebrating the 150 years of Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. We're going to have a big display at the show in June. with ploughs and wheelwright materials and things like that. And I've got some display articles now, and I've also got the leaflets that Lincolnshire Wolds Countryside produce, walking leaflets, Lincolnshire Wolds Walking Festival leaflets, and leaflets about the Lincolnshire Wolds area of outstanding natural beauty.
So this is clearly a teaser head to the June events, in which, as you said, I've actually forgotten, and Sally and Jane have obviously been remiss in actually not saying it's 150 years of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So as you can see, we've got a yoke for carrying milk pails, and we've got some hobnail boots, and we've got various other agricultural implements that are gaining a lot of interest today, especially amongst the young children and youth.
Ben?
Yeah, so obviously, I see the seed drawer in front of me. Just for the benefit of people listening at home, how would you use this device? What is it? What's the purpose of it?
Okay, so it's all part of the agricultural revolution in the 19th century, where the scientific method was used in farming for the first time. So this is an efficient way of drilling seeds at a good length between each seed being sown, so you can get maximum yield from your crop.
Okay, very interesting. And what would be the sort of distance? Do you make that distance up yourself, or is it a case of it's a set calculation for each one?
It's adjustable. It's adjustable. Dependent on the seed that you use. So the seed drill I've got on the other side of the display is mostly for beans and for the larger kind of seeds. What I've also got, which I'll be displaying at the county show, is a fiddle drill. So it's a
music while you sow.
Yeah, unfortunately it doesn't play music. It just makes a horrible noise. But that's for the smaller kind of wheat and that kind of thing. So again, that's an efficient way of transferring your seed onto the ground without losing a lot of excess seed.
Those pesky human beings, we're darn clever when it comes to instrumenting things, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And the Victorians were at the forefront of that. And in fact, the Lincolnshire Wolds was the kind of playground for these new scientific methods.
People can obviously find out more about what we've been talking about by going online. If they can't be here today, what's the best website to go to?
If you go to our website, linkswolds.org.uk.
Well, Ben, you asked to see hounds, and we brought you to see hounds, and more than just hounds, hounds especially from which particular hunt?
So we're here today from the East Lincs Basset Hounds.
I mean, the thing that always has impressed me is the quality of the breed that we've actually got here, because they're all on top form. I think last year they were actually calling after us as we were going into all sorts of ways. But talk us through these hounds and why they're so special.
So what we've got here today are what we call English Basset Hounds. They're particularly bred for hunting. And a lot of people would look and immediately realise they're not like Fred Basset you would see in the street. They're a lot more active, slightly shorter ears and longer legs. Which just enables them to cross the Lincolnshire countryside for anything up to 4 or 5 hours at a time. And kept all together, we've 5.5 couple here today. There's 22.5 couple, so that's 45 in the kennels. The bitches and the dog hounds, they live separately but sort of together in their groups. And that's how we sort of look after them, feed them and exercise them.
Are they quite hard to sort of maintain? Is it a quite hard or laborious process, or are they quite easy?
I think it's not a long process in terms of the basics of sort of cleaning them out and feeding them, but obviously the more time you spend with them, the more you get out of it. I mean, I'm personally speaking, I'm a complete amateur. I have a job full time other than this. This is my sort of my free time activity. But we kennel the hounds with the South Wold Hunt near Horncastle, and their staff do all the work with the Bassets on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, I mean, to have them looking well and looking as good as they do today does take time.
No, it's really interesting. And what kind of age groups are they, if you don't mind me asking? Are they younger, or are they older, or have you got a mixture?
So we've got a mixture here today. The youngest hounds we've got will be 2 years old, so they've done one season hunting with the pack. And the oldest we've got here was entered to the pack in 2012, So she's a seventh season hound, 8 years old. And that sort of probably is about the age range we've got. We've got 4.5 couple of what we call unentered hounds in the kennel, so they'll start hunting in September. And obviously not brought them today. They've only been back in the kennels a month or so since the season finished, so they're sort of still getting used to things in the pack.
It's pretty much perfect weather for hounds today, isn't it? It's not rainy, it's a nice breeze, etc., nice and fresh. I mean, if there is such a thing as an ideal day, presumably this is it for them.
It would probably be a good hunting day. That's perhaps why they're looking a little more sprightly than they do when we're at things in the height of summer, when they're sort of laid out enjoying the sun. But I think whatever it's like, they enjoy a day out and they enjoy seeing people.
Countryside Links is obviously a wonderful opportunity for youngsters to find out about what goes on in the countryside, from rural activities and so on. I see you've got all sorts of wonderful colouring activities at your stand as well.
We have. We've got all sorts of Bassett-related things here that children of all ages can come and enjoy. And, of course, anybody can come and ask us questions about the Bassetts or about hunting in general.
Just like we've just done, really.
Absolutely, and as you say, it's a really a day for children to come and ask questions. And I think hunting is a key part of rural Lincolnshire, and we're really pleased to see anybody who's interested.
Well, after the excitement of the hounds, you've brought us over to the policeman. Great stuff. And we're about to speak to
PC Neil Gridley from Lincolnshire Police Dog Section,
and
Sergeant Tom Richardson, Lynx Dog Section.
Fantastic. Talk to us about how it's so vital that dogs and canines play a critical part in terms of policing in Lincolnshire.
Dogs do a role that can't be done by anything else. They're vital in such a rural county where we are thin on the ground. Dogs bring something extra to our toolkit to allow us to go out and deal with crime.
Ben?
Yeah, and obviously, the dogs, I don't know if you do have them with you today, but do you predominantly have drug dogs, search dogs, or is it a case of, normal police dogs, Alsatians as such, do you use them for different purposes?
Yeah, absolutely. General purpose dogs, which you refer to as the Alsatians or German Shepherds, are every handler in Lincolnshire has a general purpose police dog, be it a German Shepherd or a Malinois. There's 10 of those out across the county with handlers. Additional to that, we have drugs dogs, which are run alongside the general purpose police dogs. And normally, drugs dogs will also search for cash and firearms. And then soon, later this year, we're going to be introducing some digital media search dogs, which are trained to find USBs and other digital media, which will be used in conjunction with some of the child sex exploitation and child pornography work that we do across the county as well.
I was really shocked to find a Countryfile report a few months back which suggested that there is a growing crime in terms of people's dogs being kidnapped. Is that still a problem in Lincolnshire?
I don't think that's something that we've particularly come across.
No, not in my
That's good. Well, let's hopefully it remains that, basically.
Yeah, no.
Because clearly, I mean, in terms of actually just building bonds with your dogs, etc., they are partners in every sense of the word, really.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. These dogs live with us at home. They come home with us at the end of our working shift, and they're our responsibility 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. So, yeah, they are part of the family, albeit they aren't pets. They are police dogs, and we have to remember that. But, yes, they do have a strong bond with us.
And what are the sort of more common crimes or more common jobs that you come across with the dogs that you have to deal with on a, let's say, daily basis?
So, general purpose police dogs, the bulk of their work is either tracking, searching and biting are the three headings that it comes under. So we will search for both property and people, be it that somebody who's wanted in relation to a suspect of a crime or a missing person. It might be somebody who's missing from home, perhaps vulnerable by way of mental health or Alzheimer's, those sorts of things. Obviously, they will pursue and detain people by way of biting them. And we can also track as well. So if a vehicle, for instance, is left at the side of the road, having been stolen, and somebody's made away from that vehicle, some hours later, even the dog can arrive, and we can track where that offender's gone across the land. So that's the general purpose dogs, and the drugs dogs I've already alluded to their work as well.
And apart from freezing in a field in Lincolnshire on Countryside Links Day, etc., what is it about events like Countryside Links that helps you engage and connect with the public? I mean, clearly the children are loving the horn in the background.
Is it cold? I hadn't noticed. This is one of the only opportunities that we get to engage with the public. We do a lot of our work during the hours of darkness. We don't see decent members of the public much. We deal a lot with criminals, but this is one of the only opportunities we get to meet with the good public of Lincolnshire, really. It's nice to have the opportunity to chat with them and for them to be able to chat with us and realise that we are out there trying to do a job for them.
Well, we salute you in every sense of the word. Well done. And I'm sure that, as Lincolnshire folk can be just a little bit more grateful for the fact that you're out there sorting out the miscreants of society.
Indeed, yes.
Perfection. We're beginning to round up this particular report, but we couldn't obviously let the listener go without the joys of Toilers of the Deep and indeed our medieval artist extraordinaire, whose name once again is
Sean Clark.
Sean, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. I see you've wrapped up a little bit since we spoke to you this morning.
I am. I'm in my medieval costume now, which is fur-lined. It's with felt leggings, woolen leggings, and fur-lined jacket, which is really cosy and warm. So,
and of course, back in the days of medieval times, and shall we say the 1200s or 1300s or even earlier, this is probably like the height of summer, really.
It probably was, actually, yeah. And you know, you dress for the occasion anyway. Loads of layers, and probably lots of bacon butties and a good layer of fat to keep you warm as well. And you can't beat it being outsider.
It's a way forward. Ben, what have your highlights been as we begin to sort of close away? And I'm going to be asking our man here to provide a kind of farewell sort of tune to leave us with.
Yeah,
what are your highlights?
One of the highlights was you singing along with him. It's certainly a highlight I think most of us would like to listen to again.
That's the beauty of a podcast. You can, of course.
There we go. No, it's been brilliant, and I've really enjoyed it. It's nice to see the variety of stalls and the variety of people that come out today as well, and thankfully the weather's holding off just for now, so yes, I should be back.
Have you had a chance to visit some of your neighbours?
I've popped in on a few on the snow basin next door, and Lawrence and Jenny, who are the leather workers, who've made me a very nice stock
for
one of my bottles as well. So we sort of you put two or three in a field, and we could make a living from each other just by medieval trading.
I was just saying, it's genuine medieval bartering, which is fantastic. I'd certainly give a thumbs up to the hounds there on top form. Some of the exhibitors in the sort of indoor area also fantastic stuff. Ladies in pigs. So many magical things there. But obviously, you're at the top of the whole sort of system. We're also very impressed with the windmill people as well. That was very impressive. So great stuff there. Can I ask you to play us out with a suitably medieval tune as we head off, on behalf of Siren Radio's Midweek Drive Morning Edition, into the wild blue yonder?
Okay, so I'll play this little Italian medieval tune, which is called the Petti Rions, which basically translates as little nothings. It's a nice little ditty.